Chapter 4, Getting Started with Stem Cells. In 2003, I sold my clinic in Arizona to fulfill a promise I'd made to my wife when we moved to Arizona, that we would live in her home country, the United Kingdom, for a year to expose our children to that culture. Unfortunately, living in England was not the best fit for me. Not having any research to do was boring me to tears, and I felt my mind wasting away. I wanted to continue the work I'd been doing in Arizona, so I spent a lot of time traveling and not very much time at home with my family. Shirley and I reached a compromise in 2004 when I set up a laboratory in the Bahamas and we moved the family there. I could continue pursuing cancer therapies in the Bahamas without having to be away from my family. It was there that I started working with stem cells as an extension of working with dendritic cell vaccines. The process I developed in Arizona was a very efficient method of converting monocytes into dendritic cells. In the Bahamas, I wanted to see if we could do something similar with stem cells. My aha moment regarding the reparative effects of stem cells occurred when a cancer patient who happened to also have a bad knee was undergoing treatment. In order to stimulate the release of CD34-positive stem cells from bone marrow, our cancer patients received granulocyte colony stimulating factor, GCSF, which mobilized these cells from their bone marrow. This patient experienced knee pain relief simply from the mobilization of bone marrow stem cells, which led me to hypothesize that chronic injuries might be due to a lack of repair cells available to repair the injury. The mobilized stem cells likely homed in to the site of injury, in this case, the knee, repairing the chronic injury. The treatment of chronic injuries with autologous CD34-positive hematopoietic cells, which could be mobilized using the drug mentioned above, or pulled out of the bone marrow mechanically, has since been researched and found to have beneficial effects in the treatment of liver and kidney disease, spinal cord injury, and a multitude of orthopedic conditions. See Chapter 12 for more on orthopedics. Working in the stem cell research field can be frustrating because there are so many misconceptions about these cells and their potential uses. When most people hear the words stem cell, they automatically assume that we're talking about embryonic stem cells, which have been at the center of so much controversy in the United States for more than a decade. The perception is that all stem cells come from the unborn, and that in order to harvest the life-saving properties of these cells, a scientist must sacrifice a yet-to-be-born child. The whole idea of taking a life from one being to give it to another makes many people uncomfortable and raises moral and ethical questions. It makes me very uncomfortable, too, for additional reasons. First, I believe the best stem cells, the ones with the best healing and regenerative power, as well as the fewest complications, are adult stem cells, which can be obtained from donated umbilical cord blood, umbilical cord tissue from healthy, live births, or from a patient's own body, from the bone marrow or fat tissue, for example. Adult stem cells are not mired in controversy. In fact, the Baptist Church endorses research with adult stem cells, and the Catholic Church has been funding adult stem cell research. Second, I believe the public perception of embryonic stem cells and their usefulness is off the mark, too. Embryonic stem cells have been touted as a potential miracle treatment for just about any disease, but the research has shown otherwise. When a zygote is fertilized, it starts as just two cells, the ovum and the sperm. These cells combine and start to divide and differentiate. These early cells are pluripotent. They have the same ability to become or differentiate into any cell in the human body. Some cells become the fetus's heart, some the liver, some the skin, etc., until from those two initial cells develops a very diverse organism, the human body, with hundreds of different specialized functions performed by many different iterations of those first two cells. With this idea as the starting point, it's easy to see how those unfamiliar with stem cell therapy research might think of embryonic stem cells taken from a 4 or 5 day old embryo called a blastocyst, before it has been implanted in a woman's womb, as a form of magic seeds. If they can potentially differentiate into any kind of cell by placing them in a sick person, they could transform into whatever tissue is needed to heal that person's illness. Stem cells injected into the brain might become brain cells and set about healing a brain malfunction. Or those injected into the heart might become heart tissue and repair compromised arteries. Those who are suffering from Parkinson's disease, which is caused when the brain cells that produce dopamine no longer function, have long held out hope that embryonic stem cells can be adapted to renew this function in the brain. Yet this therapy has never been successful. Its ability to differentiate into any cell is the embryonic stem cell's double-edged sword. This potential to divide and differentiate immediately means that even one embryonic stem cell contaminates a culture of differentiated cells. It will become a teratoma, a tumor mass, with tissue or organ components that is trying to become a baby but can't. In experiments with rats, when researchers have introduced embryonic stem cells into the rat to help heal a cancer or some other disease, the rat always develops benign tumors. As a result, the tumorigenic risk of embryonic stem cell therapy has greatly inhibited its use. In addition, the costs associated with making darn sure there are no truly embryonic and tumorigenic stem cells left in the final product are very high. This was one of the reasons the biopharmaceutical company Geron pulled the plug on their much-touted spinal cord injury trial using embryonic stem cells. When they pulled out, my colleagues and I wrote an article entitled "The King is Dead, Long Live the King," which described why we believe the Geron project failed. Incidentally, Stem Cells Incorporated recently pulled the plug on their fetal stem cell clinical trials as well. So it appears all of the hype will finally come to a halt, and the reality that adult stem cells are the only way to go will set in. Not to mention, embryonic stem cells, once differentiated into new tissue cells, are antigenic, which means that the immune system recognizes the tissue as foreign and mounts an attack against it. Immunosuppressive drugs must be administered alongside treatment with embryonic stem cells and can lead to complications. For all these reasons, there has not been a successful clinical trial using embryonic stem cells to date. I was interested in working with adult stem cells because they are easier to obtain, potentially as useful, not shrouded in controversy, and unlike embryonic stem cells, when using postnatal or adult stem cells in the naive state, means that they haven't been manipulated genetically or chemically. None have ever produced secondary tumors in the patient. The cells are also immune-privileged, meaning the immune system of the recipient does not recognize them as foreign, or not self, when they are first administered. In addition, unlike embryonic stem cells, these cells do not want to become babies. Instead, their normal function is to support homeostasis, the healthy status quo, by responding to and decreasing inflammation and stimulating regeneration in tissue in need of it. The best adult stem cell attribute of all is that when the cells start to become the tissue, also called the niche, in which they have taken up residence, they will begin to differentiate into that tissue type, a process known as maturing. When the cells get to a certain point of maturation, they lose their stemness, and molecules that say, "We are not you," start popping up on their surface. In response, the cells are gently cleared from the body by the immune system of the recipient. Ergo, no tumor formation. Any stem cells that don't come from embryos or fetal tissue are known as adult stem cells. This includes those taken from umbilical cord blood and umbilical cord tissue donated from healthy live births, one of the richest sources of highly potent stem cells. The potency of these cells come from their ability to multiply, or double, in a short period of time, as well as the enhanced quality of their secretome, or the range of bioactive molecules that they secrete. Even though a newborn baby may seem the furthest thing from a grown-up, the stem cells taken from an infant's umbilical cord are still considered adult stem cells to make a clear distinction between them and the cells that are harvested from embryos or fetuses. For further clarification, I will also refer to umbilical cord stem cells as postnatal stem cells. Within the body, adult stem cells are undifferentiated cells that reside in tissues and organs alongside differentiated cells. Differentiated cells are those that have become specialized. No longer stem cells, they become a specific type of cell, such as a bone, muscle, or blood cell. Stem cells can renew themselves and, under certain conditions, can differentiate into specialized cell types. When the adult stem cell begins to divide, it produces one daughter cell and another identical stem cell, and one precursor cell that can differentiate into whatever kind of cell is needed. Mainly, stem cells repair the tissues where they are found. Back in the 1950s, when scientists first started studying stem cells, they found two kinds in bone marrow. The first are known as hematopoietic stem cells, which form the various elements of blood. The others are bone marrow stromal stem cells, mesenchymal stem cells that can repair bone, cartilage, and fat, and support the formation of fibrous connective tissue. Since then, researchers have found stem cells in many organs and tissues, including the brain, blood vessels, skeletal muscles, skin, teeth, heart, gut, and liver. In fact, stem cells are found throughout the entire body. They live in a specific area of each tissue, a place called the stem cell niche, where they remain dormant for long periods of time until disease or injury activates them to begin to repair tissue. Mesenchymal stem cells, MSCs, exist in many tissues as a dormant cell form known as pericyte. Peri means around, and cyte means cell. Pericytes hold tight to capillaries, the smallest of blood vessels that exist throughout the body at the ends of arteries. When the body signals an injury or inflammation, pericytes are recruited to help heal tissues, at which point they become activated as MSCs. Mesenchymal stem cells are multipotent, meaning that they are capable of differentiating into more than one type of new tissue. While multipotent cells have the ability to become more than one cell type, they are not to be confused with pluripotent cells, embryonic stem cells, which can become any cell type. Mesenchymal stem cells are considered multipotent because, by definition, they can become at least three different tissues, bone, cartilage, or fat. This is done all of the time in the laboratory. As you will find out later, however, this differentiation rarely happens in the body, and even when it does, has very little to do with the beneficial effects of the cells. Despite being found throughout the body, there are only a small number of stem cells in each tissue. When I first began working with stem cells, research at the time had shown that they had a limited capacity to divide. My feeling was that if we could advance the technology we had used in our cancer research to induce stem cells to make more precursor cells for preparing dendritic cell vaccines, we might be able to culture stem cells similarly and deploy them to fix what ailed our patients. In the Bahamas, we gave patients a drug that would stimulate the bone marrow to release hematopoietic, blood cell-forming, stem cells into the blood. We hooked them up to the leukapheresis machine to filter out the white blood cells and the stem cells and return the rest of the blood to the patients, a similar process to dialysis for kidney disease patients. Then we cultured the stem cells in a cocktail of cell growth hormones, which encouraged the cells to divide. This was very exciting work to be involved with, something that put us on the cutting edge of treating cancer because of the three different treatments we pioneered. We had the mature dendritic cells that consumed tumor tissue and presented information to the immune system so that it could attack the cancer. We had also developed an extract from a plant known as bindweed that undercut the tumor's infrastructure by preventing it from growing new blood cells to support its expansion. Now, with the army of stem cells we were able to release into the bloodstream, we had soldiers who were ready and able to initiate tissue repair. It was a useful trifecta. By starting with stem cells and growing, expanding them in the laboratory, and then converting them into monocytes and then dendritic cells, we were able to make more potent vaccines than we had been able to produce in our clinic in Arizona. We successfully treated several patients with stage 4 melanoma who remain cancer-free today. Because of the vaccines we developed with their stem cells, the clinic also had excellent success with mesothelioma, a cancer caused by asbestos exposure, for which there is currently no effective treatment. There are more mesothelioma patients alive and well from their treatment at our center in the Bahamas than from any other treatment center in the world. Word of our advances in culturing stem cells and converting monocytes to dendritic cells started to spread throughout the medical community. A doctor approached the lab asking if we could use hematopoietic CD34-positive stem cells from the umbilical cord. The doctor hoped that if we could culture enough CD34-positive cells, we would be able to use them to treat a little boy who was profoundly affected with cerebral palsy. Cerebral palsy is the result of a brain injury, usually before birth, that affects muscle tone and movement and delays overall development. People with cerebral palsy often have other conditions such as intellectual disabilities, vision and hearing problems, or seizures. People with cerebral palsy are deprived of oxygen at birth and as a result have decreased blood flow to the brain during a crucial time in development. What was hoped for was that the CD34-positive cells, which are potently angiogenic, meaning they induce new blood vessel growth and home to areas of low oxygen or damaged areas of the brain, would increase blood flow to starved areas of the brain and could potentially allow for a catching up of the development of those parts of the brain. A lot of this rationale was demonstrated by Paul Sandberg, PhD, DSC, and his colleagues at the University of South Florida. They had already done pioneering work using umbilical cord cells to treat heart attacks and strokes in rats. He was my hero, actually, because of his experiments in which he induced heart attacks in rats and then gave one group stem cells. Guess what? The hearts of the rat that received stem cells got better. the scarring on their hearts was a third of what it was in the untreated animals. He did the same thing with rats experiencing strokes. He induced strokes in the rats and gave one group stem cells. Their brains got much better when compared to those rats that didn't get stem cells. We had refined the technology to produce these cells, and we had a doctor and a family who were willing to try a new kind of therapy for the first time in a human being. We cultured umbilical cord cells in our lab, and the doctor injected the cells into the boy with cerebral palsy, who at 3 years old was blind, deaf, dumb, and confined to a wheelchair. Then we waited. 3 months after he received the cells, the boy's father noticed his son's eyes tracking a ball that his brother was bouncing. Suddenly, the boy could see. There had been nothing wrong with his eyes. Instead, his blindness was caused by damage to his cerebral cortex. After several more treatments, the boy started to hear and talk and could eventually walk with the aid of his walker. His parents were ecstatic. What I believe happened with our cultured cells is that they moved throughout the bloodstream to the damaged area, homing in on the site of the injury. Once there, the cells stimulated the formation of new blood vessels and secreted trophic factors, or bioactive molecules, that encouraged new cell growth. Because the boy was so young and his system was so responsive, when blood started to flow to these areas, it jump-started his neural development and stimulated it to continue on a normal path, repairing some of the functions that had been damaged by his cerebral palsy. Treatment of this patient opened up an entirely new area of healing for us. The notion that cultured umbilical cord stem cells could be used to regenerate damaged tissue was a fulfillment of a hope, the promise of postnatal stem cells to treat chronic diseases, even if a full cure was surely decades away. Even more exciting, our initial work indicated that these umbilical cord stem cells were not as difficult to work with as bone marrow cells and did not stimulate any of the side effects that preliminary treatments with embryonic stem cells had shown. There was plenty of evidence regarding both the reparative effects of umbilical cord stem cells and the ability to transplant them without negative effects. When a doctor treats a cancer patient with chemotherapy, the treatment also destroys the patient's bone marrow and therefore the ability to make new blood cells. In order to compensate for this, the doctor also does a bone marrow transplant. The donor cells must be carefully matched or the body will reject them. The body recognizes the new bone marrow cells as foreign, and the immune system attacks them. This phenomenon is known as host versus graft reaction and will result in immediate destruction of the transplanted cells, rendering them ineffective. A more serious and oftentimes fatal complication of a bone marrow transplant is the engraftment of the bone marrow into the recipient's bone marrow after the bone marrow stem cells are destroyed by chemotherapy and/or radiation. With an empty T-cell compartment, the donor bone marrow will start producing T cells that recognize the recipient's tissues as foreign and begin destruction. This is why matching the cells is so important, and the recipient receives lifelong immune suppressive treatments to reduce the possibility of the disease. Cord blood, unlike bone marrow, is immune privileged. The stem cells that come from cord blood are immunologically more immature, so they do not set off an attack from the recipient's immune system. This meant that we could treat patients with cord blood cells without the expensive and time-consuming process of matching the cells to the patient or needing to use potentially harmful immune-suppressive drugs. In 2010, my colleague Tom Ickham and I wrote a book chapter on the immune privilege of umbilical cord stem cells. It is also known that umbilical cord stem cells can act the same as bone marrow in that they can repopulate the bone marrow of a patient who is in need of new bone marrow because of chemo and/or radiation. In fact, the U.S. FDA classifies umbilical cord blood and the stem cells it contains as bone marrow in some of its regulations. Unlike bone marrow stem cells, transplanted umbilical cord stem cells, when used for repopulating bone marrow, have a much lower risk to the patient of developing graft versus host disease due to their immaturity. Umbilical cord blood is being used more and more in bone marrow transplants because of these advantages over bone marrow. I guess my excitement over the successes we are having with this new treatment overcame my good judgment about publicity. When a reporter from a local newspaper, the Bahama Journal, contacted our medical director, John Clement, MD, about doing an article featuring our work, I didn't think twice about the request. I vividly remember a pretty young reporter with a Channel 7 microphone coming out of our Dr. Clement's office with a huge smile on her face. She was positively beaming. I asked Dr. Clement what that was all about. He said this news reporter was going to do a story about stem cells and how we were helping so many people who had no other good treatment options. The next day's front page headline read, "Secret Surgeries Exposed." The entire front page was dedicated to our clinic and the topic of embryonic stem cells, even though we were using non-embryonic umbilical cord stem cells that were donated from healthy live births. The article discussed how research with embryonic stem cells was banned in the United States. Buried on page 17 was the fact that we were not using embryonic cells. This publication took advantage of the wide misperceptions people have about stem cell research. It was the first of 14 articles about us, none of them good. The avalanche of inaccurate news reporting about our research made a big impact in the Bahamas. 1 month later, in July of 2004, we received a letter from the Bahamian Minister of Health prohibiting us from any further treatments using stem cells. Having seen the benefits of the cells, I wasn't close to giving up. I knew the potential of the treatments and wasn't going to let a misinformed government stop me from progressing with what I knew was cutting-edge research that could help treat devastating chronic diseases. I jumped on a plane to look for another place where we could legally treat patients with stem cells. After carefully evaluating 6 options, I decided that we would move our clinic to Costa Rica. I decided on Costa Rica for a couple of reasons. It is a popular tourist destination with 20 direct jet flights every day from the United States and Canada. It has a thriving middle class and a very well-educated population. I received legal counsel that the treatments could be done there under informed consent between the doctor and patient, as long as the treatments were not part of a clinical trial. I also had previous work experience there. I had been in Costa Rica in 1998 and 1999 to perform treatments with dendritic cells, working with Fabio Solano, MD, who agreed to become the medical director of our new stem cell institute. So in 2004 and 2005, I traveled to Costa Rica for 10 days each month to build the laboratory and clinic. Chapter 4, Supplemental Information. Autologous bone marrow studies. Mesenchymal stem cells, MSCs, used for treatment may come from the patient, autologous, or self-derived, or from a donor, allogeneic. MSCs can be obtained from many tissues in the body, including fat, bone marrow, and umbilical cord. Bone marrow contains cells that are useful for regeneration, including MSCs and CD34-positive cells. Bone marrow MSCs are usually extracted from the hip or the knee. In many cases, it is useful to concentrate the extracted cells that will be the most helpful. This is known as bone marrow aspirate concentrate, BMAC. Bone marrow MSCs have been used to safely treat various conditions with positive results. See Table 1. Table 1. Conditions treated with autologous bone marrow mesenchymal stem cells. Conditions: multiple sclerosis, Duchenne muscular dystrophy, spinal cord injury, osteoarthritis, heart failure, wound healing, autism spectrum disorders, orthopedics cartilage repair, orthopedics tendon injuries, orthopedics arthroscopy enhancement, orthopedics bone healing and non-union, myocardial infarction, liver disease, Parkinson's disease, diabetes, ophthalmology, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Crohn's disease. Adult stem cell therapy endorsed by the Vatican. A symposium was organized in 2006 by the Vatican to address the use of stem cells. Pope Benedict XVI declared that adult stem cell research deserved approval and encouragement so long as it remained ethical. This line of thought was expanded in the 2008 church document, Dignitas Personae, in which it was stated that research on adult stem cells should be encouraged and supported. Pope Benedict XVI restated this position of encouragement in 2011, qualifying adult stem cell-based therapies as a significant step forward in medical science. Also in 2011, the Vatican signed a $1 million deal with a United States-based stem cell company to fund research and education on adult stem cells. Stem cell type and stem cell origin. Embryonic stem cells, early developmental stage embryo, blastocyst. Fetal stem cells, fetus. Amniotic stem cells, amniotic fluid during routine amniocentesis procedure. Postnatal stem cells, umbilical cord blood or tissue from a healthy live birth. Adult stem cells, living human. Postnatal stem cells are also considered adult stem cells.